Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful. Oh, that's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count. Wow. And here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report podcast. I am Jason Floyd, and this edition of the podcast will feature four interviews. Two fighters will be fighting on Saturday's UFC Vegas number 16. A fighter that will be a part of Bellator 254 on December the 10th, and a fighter that will be a part of LFA 96 come up on Friday night. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Justin James. He's going to be taking on Gabriel Benitez. Of course, this is a fight that was actually supposed to take place last month, so talk to him about that matchup. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Jordan Levin, who's going to make his official UFC debut on Saturday against Matt Wyman. Then we'll turn our attention to Bellator. You'll hear my conversation with Cameron Lachinoff, who's going to be taking on a newcomer in Bellator at Bellator 254. And then the final interview you're going to hear will be my conversation with Mo Miller, who is a 4-0 prospect. He'll be a part of the LFA 96 card. So hopefully everyone had a great Thanksgiving weekend. Hopefully had fun times. Maybe had a couple days off from work. And, of course, we're going to get you ready for what's coming up this week in MMA. As I mentioned, we got the UFC card, UFC Vegas number 16. We got a matchup between Kevin Holland and Jack Hermanson that's going to headline that fight card. Of course, we'll preview that fight card later on this week as I'll be joined by Daniel Galvan for Wednesday's edition of the podcast. But let's get right into the interviews. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Justin James. He's going to be taking on Gabriel Benitez. This is a fight that was actually supposed to take place last month, but you're actually going to hear Justin James talk about why that fight was ultimately pushed by the fact that his opponent had COVID, and prior to his opponent pulling out of the fight card, he had COVID as well. And also, he talks about how his father will be in his corner for this fight. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's going to step inside the octagon, come up here, UFC Vegas number 16. Justin, man, as always, man, appreciate the time. It has been, an interesting time for you over the last, month or so. You know, of course, you're supposed to fight there back last month, but unfortunately, that one can't come together. But now you're here next week as we're talking. We're 8 days away from this fight, man. So first off, so what's it like as a fighter having a fight a week after Thanksgiving?
I'm not big on Thanksgiving, honestly. Like, my Thanksgiving, if I had a choice, it'd be like tacos and pizza and nachos and shit. But, honestly, since I live in Vegas by myself, I don't really have any family here. So it's just another day for me. Yesterday I trained in the morning, and I'm not really tempted by the traditional Thanksgiving feast per se. So it wasn't too bad, man. I'd like to be with my family back in Michigan. Usually I fly back, but I have business to handle and they understand. And I'm here, and next week I'm stepping in the cage and knocking Gabriel out.
I'm not a big turkey guy.
I'm not either.
Like, I'm like, I'll have once, maybe twice a year. I'm just, yeah. I'm just not, give me a pumpkin pie. Now, that's a little bit of a different story.
I'll smash some macaroni and cheese and some pumpkin pie any day of the week.
Exactly. But, of course, I saw, James Lynch, one of my fellow reporters, he had spoken to you, and, a couple of things that he mentioned about the fact that his fight's at 55 and about, the COVID aspect of this matchup. Was the fact that being 55 just more about just kind of the timing more than anything else?
Yeah, definitely. So what happened was, I got COVID early in October. Then when I recovered, then Mowgli got COVID after or around the same time. So, trying to prepare to fight somebody like Gabriel Benitez 2 weeks after having COVID, it's just not ideal. Not to mention, not just fighting a top-of-the-line stud fighter like him, making weight at 145 was just going to be fucking death. It was death when I fought Gavin Tucker on 3.5 weeks, you know, coming out of, and I was losing weight while having COVID, but my gas tank was definitely affected. So, you know, between my management, between my coaching and myself, I think we made the right decision to extend it out. At 155, I feel great at 155. I get to actually worry about fighting and not just worry about weight cut and diet. So it's been a fun couple weeks, you know, since COVID recovery. I'm feeling great. I'm feeling strong, and I'm ready to go next weekend.
When you were going through the quarantine aspect of when you had COVID, did you find yourself watching a lot of fight film and just kind of, you know, using that time of, you know, just kind of maybe the more the mental side of the fight?
You know, honestly, it was a blessing in disguise, the COVID was, because every single day my son would wake me up by calling my phone until I woke up at about 11 a.m. And we'd get a good, you know, we'd talk on the phone or we would play video games, you know, usually for 2, 3, 4 hours, you know, straight. I didn't really watch, you know, I kind of disconnected myself from MMA for that point. You know, my life is so involved and so, you know, obsessed with MMA. You know, it was nice to get a little break. Nice to step away, not have to go into the gym, not have to get punched in the face every day, not have to be fucking sore and sweating every day. So I really took the 2 weeks I had in COVID and really just spent a lot of time with my son and a lot of time with my coaches as well. You know, every night playing Warzone. And, you know, I know it sounds silly because we're just playing video games, but there is kind of a connection there that you do build, you know, and you build on your friendship. And, you know, I'm friends with my coaches, you know, prior to fighting and all that all as well. But I still feel, you know, it feels like I'm hanging out with them still every single day, as for, you know, and not worrying about MMA and fighting. So to answer your question, I didn't really watch too much film while I was in COVID. You know, I mostly just, you know, I tried to disconnect myself from MMA for those 2 weeks just to kind of give myself a reset.
You know, when we spoke leading up to that Gavin Tucker fight, and you said that we're obsessed, and I just remembered when we spoke about it, you said, man, I'm obsessed with Gavin Tucker. I'm watching everything. Are you obsessed about Benitez the same way?
You know, I am, but it's a little bit different. Because again, you know, we're supposed to fight, then we're not fighting. Then we're, you know, contemplating on, are we going to fight December 5th? Or I actually, you know, it's different. I'm in a little bit of a different state right now compared to when I was fighting Gavin. You know, I was obsessed with Gavin because, you know, I was very, very nervous, not about the matchup, but about the weight cut. And I needed something to keep my mind off it. So I became obsessed with Gavin Tucker instead of being obsessed with the scale. And, you know, I got a psych coach, you know, the UFC. I've been talking with the psych coach at the UFCPI, and I think we've, he's been able to benefit me a lot in the mental game. And as much as I am obsessed with Gabriel Benitez, you know, I don't feel as much pressure this time around, and I don't have the pressure of the weight cut. So this is more of exciting for me than it is obsession.
Prior to you getting into UFC and obviously having all the tools that are there at the PI, had you looked at the mental side of the game before all this? You know, because you were talking about how, you know, you've been working with the psych there. And was that something you even thought about, you know, prior to getting the UFC?
It was a little bit, but, you know, I've always kind of just, I come from my wrestling roots, man. You know, I always feel that, you know, I'm mentally tough and I've always been mentally tough. But, you know, after that Gavin Tucker loss, you know, I started to question not so much my ability, but I don't know. I just started to question all these things, you know, all these mental monsters get into my head is, you know, am I good enough? Am I going to gas out again? And, you know, talking with Micah at the PI, you know, on a weekly basis has really straightened me out and really got me to understand of living in the present, not so much the future, not worrying about what the outcome is going to be, but living in the moment and preparing what I can do right now to prepare for next week. So whatever happens, happens. And I put myself in the best position, if that makes any sense. But yeah, like I said, right now I feel physically, mentally, I'm sharper than I ever have been. And I can't wait to show everybody next weekend.
Are you the type of athlete that after a competition is over, it's rearview mirror, whether it's a win or a loss? Or is it always stuff just kind of sticks in your mind?
You know, I look at, you know, one of my favorite quarterbacks of all time, Brett Favre. And, you know, something I admired about him, and, you know, I coach, there's another NFL player that I've worked with a little bit. His name's Jerome Sapp. He played for the Ravens, played for the Colts. But, you know, something he told me and something I heard in an interview about Brett Favre is Brett Favre was a slinger. you know, as a quarterback. He didn't care if he threw 10 interceptions in a game. The very next play, he's out there. He's slinging the ball around. He's throwing it downfield. He's never doing a check down route, you know, to build his confidence. And that's how I am. You know, it's after that Gavin Tucker fight, you know, my confidence was hurt a little bit. But you know what? After a couple of days, you know, throw that shit out the window. I'm back on the field. I'm back throwing touchdowns. And, you know, that's the way it's going to be, man. I can't dwell on that. I can't dwell on the past. I can take the things that I could do different. You know, honestly, Gavin's a great fighter, and I'm not taking away from him. But the guy that fought in the cage wasn't Justin James. That was a 145-pound guy that, you know, had about 2 or 3 minutes of gas tank due to the weight cut. You know, I trained harder for that fight than I have probably any other fight I have in my career. And, you know, after 4 minutes in the first round, man, when you don't have anything left, you don't have anything left. I'm not going to dwell on that. I'm looking to the future, and I'm looking at knocking Mowgli out next weekend.
Do you think your days at 45 could be over sooner than maybe you expect?
You know, honestly, I'm going to go back to 45, but, you know, I need the UFC to work with me, and I need a proper training camp. You know, I'm not an overweight fat guy walking around, you know, blowing up to 190 pounds. You know, I'm walking around 12 to 15% body fat at, you know, 170 comfortably. You know, I like to live my life and stuff. You know, I just can't do these short notice fights anymore. You know, I told him I'd take it. You know, I told him prior to signing to Gavin, I said, anytime, anywhere, short notice, long notice, I don't give a F. I'm showing up on weight and I'm knocking people out. You know, unfortunately, after, you know, how I felt during that fight, I realized I need more time, and these short notice fights, I'm going to take less and less of them as the opportunity arises.
Do you think this fight changes at all being 10 pounds more than it was previously?
No, and that's the thing, you know, Mowgli is a 45er. I'm a 45er. The only thing that's going to change in this fight is he's not going to kill himself to make weight, and I'm not killing myself to make weight. I think it makes better for the fans because we're both featherweights. This is still a featherweight bout in my mind. This is just at lightweight, you know, and it's just because of the COVID. Like I said, if we both had a full 6 to 8 weeks, it'd be no problem. We'd make weight. We'd show up. We'd blow up. But, you know, after having COVID, 3 weeks after having COVID, we're going to go in there. We're going to fight. You know, I consider him one of the best fighters in the world. I know he considers me a good fighter as well. So, you know, I think it makes better for the fans. There's not going to be any gassing out. There's going to be fists thrown for 15 minutes, or until somebody can't stand anymore.
As you think about the matchup and what he brings to the table, what you bring to the table, like, is there something that he does well that you say, I have to stop or contain that to get victory, to walk away with a victory?
You know, he's a long, rangy southpaw, man. And fortunately, Gavin was a southpaw as well. So I've been basically training to fight a southpaw since, you know, July. And so that, you know, that it's a great transition. But he's not the same kind of southpaw Gavin is. Gavin is a short southpaw compared to a long southpaw. And to a lot of people, to the unknown brain, you know, you wouldn't understand, you know, how much range is going to play into a factor. Gavin, you know, has to throw 2, 3, 4 punch combinations to get into range. And, you know, and then he's finishing with a kick. Now, where I believe Mowgli is on the opposite side, he's not so much the aggressor coming forward. He wants to get me to come forward so he can counter me and hit me with those big straight shots that he has and those big kicks. And, you know, although it's a southpaw, it's a little bit different of a style up. I think he's an incredible rangy fighter. I think his game plan is to get me frustrated and to get me really, you know, start to come towards him, press the action, get aggressive. And then he's going to try and counter off me. With that being said, if I saw my last performances, I'm sure he's watched it 100 times. He probably doesn't think I have a gas tank. You know, I'm really hoping he thinks that, because when he starts to apply pressure to me, I'm going to apply some back and he's not going to like it.
One of the things that you also revealed in your conversation with James Lynch was how this is going to be your father is going to be in your corner, and that he has cancer. And this may be the last time he has an opportunity to watch you fight. And you mentioned that was against doctor's orders here. So would you say this is going to be an emotional one for you?
Oh, man, I'm getting goosebumps. Even you just talking about it, man. It's like, you know, in 2007, I remember making a phone call to my dad and telling him what I wanted to do, you know, with my life, with my career. And I remember he hesitated and said, okay, let's do it. Let's sell ourselves out. You know, unfortunately, I didn't get that same support from my whole family. Obviously, who would? My dad's a little crazy. My mom doesn't want to see me go in there and get my ass whipped all the time. So, but you know, one of the things when I make a decision, he's always been behind me. He's always, no matter what it was, always supported me. And, this is my time to show him that, we made it. You know, this isn't, we're talking 2007. This is before I graduated high school. I told him that I want to be a professional MMA fighter in the UFC. I've made it. I've already been twice, but once you're there and you live it, which he's going to do next weekend, I feel that, it's a different experience, and he's going to know firsthand, you know, with Dana there, with Sean there, with seeing all the other fighters, going to the weigh-ins, having that full experience, wearing the Justin James gear, you know, that's just going to be an additional emotional trip for him. And, you know, win or lose, I plan to make it the best day of his life. And, obviously capping off with a big knockout and a fight of the night bonus, would be the icing on the cake. And, I'm taking it right to him, man. This isn't, you know, Chaos Williams says it best. This isn't personal. This is just punishment, man. And, you know, I want to make this the best day of my dad's life. And, that's what I plan to do December 5th by knocking Mowgli out.
Is this the first time your dad has been in your corner?
No, it's been a long time. I fought in Hawaii in like 2015 or 2016. And, him and I just flew out there. I didn't have a corner. I didn't have anything. And he was in my corner for that one. I'm trying to think. I believe that it's less than I've had, you know, this would be my 21st pro fight. It's been less than three times he's been in my corner, including this time. So, I can't think of any other times. And the only reason he was in my corner in Hawaii was because I didn't have anybody else, you know? And, you know, so like I said, I got my coaching staff. I have Dennis Davis and Roman Isbell. They're going to be the two guys talking, but, my dad's going to be there in spirit, you know, and if things start getting tough for me in the third round, because I do believe, you know, Mowgli is going to frustrate me with his range, and, you know, I'm just going to look to my corner and think to myself, it ain't cancer. It's not that bad. So yeah. You know, that's going to be my constant reminder of, you know, if, like I said, if I go into the third round and I'm gassed and I look over and see my old man looking at me, you know, I'm hoping that's going to be my boost to put me over the edge to finish this fight.
And obviously it's a familiar scene for you. You've now gone through this scene, you know, two occasions of, you know, this quarantine fighting and exactly everything that goes in with the UFC or what fight week is. Is there anything you'll change up this fight week based on your experiences of the previous two?
No, not really, man. You know, I'm a guy of habit and pattern. And, you know, I just had my last strength conditioning session this morning. You know, Monday I'll go in, I'm going to get a good sweat on. And basically from here on out, it's just about weight management. I'm about 15 mm-hmm. pounds over right now. And, you know, I'll start overhydrating and just, you know, getting my weight down. And no, man, it's the same for me day in and day out. I've done this 100 times and this time will be no different.
Yeah, I've heard some guys say, bring that internet cable, because if maybe you want to watch some movies, play some games, the Wi-Fi may not exactly work the way you want it in your room.
Fact. Yeah, we've had that happen a couple times. But, hey, we've made it work every time. And the UFC takes really good care of us up there at the Residence Inn. And I'm really excited to get back there, quarantine up there with my team, with my dad, get a little bonding time there, hit my hard weight cut, get it done, weigh in, and let's fight.
And of course, it all goes down here on Saturday, December the 5th. It's UFC Vegas number 16. Justin, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything, find on social media. And of course, anything else you want to mention, man, the floor is yours.
Yeah, you can, like I said, check me out on Instagram, JAY09MI, Twitter, Justin James MMA, Facebook, just Justin James. And man, I appreciate you having me. I'm really excited about this fight.
And that was my conversation with Justin James. Appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his matchup coming up here on Saturday, UFC Vegas number 16, taking on Gabriel Benitez. A lot of interesting stuff to come out of that conversation. The fact that this fight's at 155 pounds, not 145 pounds. Talking about how he had COVID, and then of course his opponent had COVID, and also talking about how his father will be in his corner on Saturday night at UFC Vegas number 16. Also a part of UFC Vegas number 16 will be Jordan Levitt. He is going to be making his UFC debut. Of course, we saw him get the win against Luke Flores back there in October on the Contender Series. He is going to be taking on Matt Wyman. So I spoke to Jordan about this matchup, and he does admit he was actually a little surprised when he got the call with the opponent being Matt Wyman. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to make his UFC debut come up here Saturday night, Jordan Levitt. Jordan, man, appreciate the time. Of course, we saw you back there at the Contender Series to get into the UFC. Now you got this one coming up, man. So what's the emotions like right now for you heading into this one?
No, There are a lot of interesting emotions. I was actually a really big fan of Matt Wyman when I was first starting to watch MMA in high school. So I have mixed feelings about going out there and fighting him and retiring him. But no, I'm not like that. But I'm very excited to go out and compete and excited to go against a real veteran of the sport who's has a lot more experience than me. And I'm hoping that his experience allows me to show off more tools. So a lot of, I think, a mantle of peace this week. I feel really good.
You know, and obviously it's, you know, we're talking here a day after Thanksgiving, and I've asked a couple other guys who've been on the show. I said, hey, what's it like being a fighter where you're fighting 1 week after Thanksgiving? Do you just kind of, you just don't partake?
Oh, no, I partook. I just put those pies in the freezer. I'm going to have it up for celebration after my fight. But yeah, I had turkey. I had some sweet potatoes, not as much as I'd like. But we put the pies in the freezer. We'll be taking them out after my fight.
So what's the go-to pie for you?
Oh, pecan. Pecan pie for sure. It's my favorite.
I'm a pumpkin guy.
Oh, pumpkin? I don't like pumpkin. It's a little too slimy. The texture's weird for me.
Yeah, like I pecans. I've just never been big on pecans. I'm not a big turkey person.
I thought you were a man of culture. I think that was incorrect.
Oh, but man, it's always a good time. You know, I'm always down for some good food, you know, but you mentioned about Matt Wyman. This is a guy that obviously has been around sport for a long time. You mentioned about, hey, you know, I watched this guy, you know, growing up. Were you a little surprised by when you got the call from your management that this was the fight offer?
Yeah, it really caught me off guard. It's like they took the person with almost the most experience versus the person with the least experience. And I mean, I'm game. I'm always excited to really test myself and to face someone of his experience. But it was very strange. It caught me off guard. I thought I'd be fighting someone who was more of an up-and-comer like me, but it's not my job to pick the fights. So
you Matt's been around this game for a long time. But as you look at the Matt Wyman of 2020 and 2019, what do you see from him as opposed to previous years? I mean, obviously he had that inactivity was a big part of it.
I feel like anyone who takes 4 years off, it's a detriment to their skills and to their journey as a fighter. I'm not quite sure why he took the time off. And before that, he had taken like a year off before that, like in 2014, like he didn't fight once that year, or he only fought once. He hasn't been very active, and that actually makes me more nervous because people could change a lot in that time frame where you don't see a lot of their skills. He faced Joe Selecki, who kind of just laid on him and didn't do much of anything. Then he fought Luis Pena, who's really awkward. Luis Pena is a very awkward fight to come out of a four-year semi-retirement against. So I have no idea what Matt Wyman I'm going to face. If it's a Matt Wyman from like 2012, 2013, it could be very interesting. When I was a fan of him, that was my favorite phase of Matt Wyman's career was like 2013, 2012. So I'm preparing for, I feel like that version of him. I feel like that was possibly his best version, but I'm ready for anything next week.
There's a word you said there that stuck out to me. You said nervous. Are you the kind of athlete that gets nervous before competition?
I'm really nervous until maybe I get to the locker room or after weigh-ins. When I see my opponent, I'm able to see him as a human being, not as some abstract ideal. I feel like a lot of fighters, we build up our opponents and we really like reduce them down to just what we see on tape. And that could be scary or it can be calming. For me, it's more scary to not know the person as a human. So when I get to see them and I get to like measure myself up and, you know, see them all emaciated at weigh-ins and everything, it really helps to humanize them, makes it easier for me. So I'm nervous until I see my opponent.
You know, one of the things I always talk about is, you know, those UFC jitters, but I kind of feel like because of the contender series, do you kind of feel like those jitters are really not there? I mean, do you say, you know, maybe I will be, maybe I will feel those UFC jitters.
I don't think I'll have UFC jitters. My last fight was my most relaxing fight ever. because I feel like a lot of fighters, when they're on the big stage, they feel like there's more to lose. But for me, I feel like there's less to lose, because at least I'm on the big stage if something bad happens. And I feel like a loss in the UFC or on the Contender Series is a lot more warranted than a loss in a bar in the middle of nowhere, Iowa, or something like that. I feel like it adds a certain amount of legitimacy to that loss. So I actually have less anxiety, I feel, going into my UFC debut, because people expect you to lose in the UFC eventually. So
I remember the last time we talked, you mentioned about how, you know, a big change that you were going to go through as you progress here was strength and conditioning and lifting weights. So what has the last couple of months been like in terms of your strength and conditioning?
It has been very humbling, and it has been very interesting. I walk in there to show me a bench press, and I thought it was pretty basic exercise. Wrong. Okay. So that was really humbling to really – I'm a beginner. So I'm all squatting with like 100 pounds on my shoulders, and there's like some 25-pound – there's some flyweight girl who's like squatting like 100 more pounds than me, and I'm like, okay. Like, I'm not comparing myself to the buff guy. I'm comparing myself to the little tiny lady. And it was very humbling to have to learn how to get the form right so I wouldn't hurt myself. But even though I only lifted weights for – like 10, 11 weeks, I put on 6 pounds of muscle and 9 pounds of lean mass. So it's obviously working. I feel like I don't really have like that athletic dad playing volleyball body anymore. I'm kind of looking more like an athlete, and my confidence is better. And I hope I'll feel stronger out there, but I definitely feel more confident in my physical capabilities.
I mean, I guess outside looking in, I would think that, you know, you would feel it like when you're wrestling, you're grappling. Do you notice a difference when you're training with what you've been able to accomplish over the last 10 weeks?
I definitely do. I've been able to actually just hold people down and not have to scramble and use my energy, which is nice because I've had to kind of skip on the cardio to work on my weightlifting, which gives me some anxiety. But I've had a greater ability to hold people down to stop them from struggling, and to really control situations that usually I would have to really fight for. And that just makes me feel all the more confident that I can just slow things down. I've often seen myself as a fighter that I had to use activity to be successful, because I lacked the strength or the explosiveness. But hopefully, maybe after a few more camps and a few more pounds of muscle, I'll be able to just go out there and relax a little bit more.
You know, fighters talk about being relaxed, and they all say it's like something you just kind of grow into. I mean, like, is it something that you try to work on in the gym? Is there like exercises you do to try to say, okay, this is how I need to be, you know, calm, relaxed? You know, those are kind of words we typically hear from athletes.
I do a lot of visualization before I spar. I'll close my eyes and I think, and I visualize how my fight's going to go. And so by the time I've made it to, I'm in the cage, I've been there dozens, hundreds, thousands of times. And I've seen every possible negative thing that could happen to me. I've made peace with it. So I feel like I've been very good at remaining calm and bringing like a calm demeanor into the cage, because I always visualize all the negative things. I don't even try to think of the positive things I can do. I'm trying to imagine if my opponent's pulling up all these miracle moves and he's whooping me, he's knocking me out of all these things, and I make peace with it. And I decide, how am I going to fight this impossibly well-rounded opponent in my head? So when I go out there and you're fighting the human version of your opponent, it's not nearly as riveting.
And of course, it's all coming down here on Saturday night, UFC Vegas number 16, Jordan. Look forward to seeing the debut here in the UFC. Of course, let me know anything you find on social media. And if there's anything else you want to mention, man.
Oh, I just want to say thankful to all my sponsors, my teammates, my family. You guys make it easy for me. And if you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at MonkeyKingUFC. Or if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Mr. Jojo Monkey King.
And there was my conversation with Jordan Leavitt. I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his matchup coming up here on Saturday, UFC Vegas number 16, as he takes on Matt Wyman. And, you know, my previous conversation with Jordan, he talked about how, you know, a big part of heading into his official UFC debut was going to be strength and conditioning. And there you hear him talking about it, and also his thoughts on Matt Wyman. So, well, good luck to Jordan Kump here on Saturday night. Now let's move over to Bellator. Next week is Bellator 254, and that card is going to feature my next guest, Cameron Lashnoff. Of course, we saw him get that win against Kyle Crutchmere back to just about 2 months ago at Bellator 249. So I had a check to catch up with Cameron. And the conversation starts off with talking about how his experience in semi-pro soccer and how ultimately that led him down the martial arts route. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to step back inside the Bellator cage here. Bellator 254, December 10th. Cameron Lashnoff. Cameron, as always, man, I appreciate time. I'd asked our guy Ed Kapp, I was like, hey, is there anything going on with Cameron? And he told me this story about you, about kind of going back to your semi-pro soccer days in Russia, that your coaches wanted you to go do a little boxing because apparently you were, you liked the battle a little bit on the pitch. So kind of talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, they always told me that I belong to rings. Every time we played soccer and it was a tight or a hard game or something. And, back home in Russia, even everywhere, I think it was like every game you lose, you get into argument. And especially back home in Russia, you throw punches right away. Somebody says something wrong and it's a game that you're losing or the score is not satisfying. It wasn't a good time. So every time we would get in trouble, the whole team would get in trouble because of me. And the coaches would always yell saying that, why don't you go try out boxing? I think you belong into the ring. I was like, coach, stop it, And soccer was a big thing in my life back then. Since 6 or 7 years old, I was playing soccer nonstop every day, training and all that. But I would always get in trouble, fighting and all kinds of sort of things. Even playing against my brother, we would always argue. You probably would know, like two brothers always have something to fight for.
When you came to the United States, what was the biggest adjustment for you from a cultural aspect? Like, well, how did life change for you living here as opposed to Russia?
Well, the biggest struggle was I had some English when I came here. I was already taking English classes before, I was planning to go to England, play soccer. So I was taking after school classes to learn some English. The only thing was I didn't know anyone. I didn't know where to go, who to contact. And I was looking to get into a semi-pro or professional team because before I came here, I was playing on the youth team for a pro soccer team. And I was getting paid at age of 13, 14 already. I wasn't, but it was my bank account that was controlled by my parents. They couldn't withdraw my money until I turned 18, and I couldn't touch that money, but they were paying for each game and all that. So when I came here, I didn't know where to go. For me, for probably 3-5 months, it was just struggle. I didn't know where can I play. The town didn't have it. In West Springfield, I didn't know where or if there's any pro team soccer around here. So for a while, I just played around here for soccer, for school, for no one, basically, for high school. And then after a while, I found out there was a semi-pro team in Ludlow. I wanted to go try out there for the soccer. I think it was Ludlow Pioneers. Right before that, literally like 1 week before the tryout start, I tore my ACL. While getting ready. So I tore my ACL. I took a whole year and a half almost off. Kept playing in high school, then graduated high school. So it was like going back and forth my last year in high school. While I was playing for the high school, some fans were bullying our goalie. They were making fun of his last name or so. I don't know what's going on, but what was going on. But so I kind of stepped up for him, and I was like, yo, shut the hell up. Don't, leave my goalie alone. And all the fans, they start screaming, and they're like, oh, you got balls? Come on down, and I will show you what's up. I was like, okay, no problem. Well, during the game, I just jumped off, over the fence, hopped off right into the, what do you call those, fence. And we start throwing hands. Then I got disqualified. I couldn't play no more soccer. I got kicked out of the game. I got kicked out of the team. And I had a one-year disqualification for high school, even though it was my senior year. I didn't care. So then I got called by the wrestling coaches. They said, you know what? Come on down. You should wrestle. You got a big heart. We, you know, this is not soccer. We wouldn't kick you out for something like that. I was just defending my goalie. I wasn't just, you know, trying to fight with anyone. But everybody that knows me, they know that it's like I find trouble or trouble finds me no matter what. And I was 16 back then, so turning 17. And I was wrestling and then lifting weight in the morning early, like 6, 7 a.m. before the classes start. One day, I broke a big freaking mirror in the gym. Like for, you know, one of those, like just when you lift, you can watch yourself. I was just putting the dumbbell back and it bounced right into the mirror. It cracked the whole, like, it was a big mirror. And they told me it's going to cost about $600. So I'm the one that will never, ever ask my parents for money, whatever. I'll find myself. So I was like, okay, you know, it's going to cost $600. I got no money. I got to do something. I start asking around and I was wrestling and this coach goes, like, I think I know you can make a couple of $100 here and there. I was like, how? He goes like, well, we had someone pulled out, canceled injury or something for, I think it was like a 1 week or 2 week notice fight. Do you want to try fighting? I was like, hell yeah, I'll go fight. I mean, I had a few fights in the United States in the streets, but this one was like in the cage. I was like, yeah, sure. I'm like, whatever. So I took that fight with no experience in amateur fighting or anything, but besides the street fight, obviously. I went in there. It was a good fight. I lost by points. I threw some illegal knees, I guess. The guy had his hand on the ground, 3 points, basically. And I was throwing, it was on the clinch, I was throwing knees to his body and he kind of went down and that's when I hit another knee to the head, kind of. And so I lost by points. That was the start of my game. And from there on, I was just, you know, fighting, playing. I kept playing soccer, but it was always fighting in the soccer game, even in my college years.
And of course, obviously, this has worked out well for you in MMA, and we get to see you back in here 2 months since the last time we saw you there. And obviously, you're in a great position being a Northeast fighter and taking advantage of these opportunities. But you're taking on an undefeated guy here in Shamil. What's kind of your take on him as an opponent?
A great fighter. I don't assume anything less than a war. So it's going to be a war. It's going to be definitely going to be a lot of blood, I'm guessing. So, I mean, that's it. Best thing, just watch the fight. You'll see what's going on.
Like, I mean, obviously, when people, you know, think of your name at this point, it's that, you know, 30-ish second of you saying, is that all you got? Give me your best shot. Do you kind of feel like fans are going to expect that from you now?
You should not. It was just natural thing came at that moment. I was not a good thing. I do not recommend to any fighters. They should not expect that. It happens, but I wasn't doing it on purpose. It was just natural thing. Like I told before, it was like, you know, I was trying to get in, stand up more and engage more. And Kyle was backing up. He was keeping a good distance. And I was kind of getting frustrated. I'm like, yeah, let's go. I want to fight. You know, let's stand up and brawl. And when he hit me, I was like, yeah, let's go. Let's do it. And then he gave me that two-piece, and I was like, yeah, that's all you got.
I got a
just natural reaction.
I got a feeling your coaches have emphasized that point to you, this camp.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Many, many times. Not just coaches. I had to have a sit down and talk for a few hours with my parents and mom. Mom was like, you know, I don't want you to fight. You know, I saw your stupid. She never watched my fight. She watches some stuff after the fight, but she goes like, you know, I heard you did some stupid moves. Like, why would you do that? I'm like, Mom, it was just natural. It's like, so you naturally want people to punch you? I was like, no. It took me a while. So far, she's a little better. You know, she's always on the side of telling me that to stop fighting. But, you know, I just love fighting. It's just legal way of beating up people and not getting in trouble and getting paid for a bit on the side.
The getting paid thing helps out a lot.
Yeah. Well, not so much lately, but hopefully in the future.
And, I think when this matchup was announced, you know, I mean, you know, just because your opponent is relatively an unknown, were you hoping for a more notable name than Shamil, or is your mindset of like, man, I know this dude's tough. Let's scrap.
Honestly, the only thing that was in my mind, I get a fight. Doesn't matter what it is. I had another couple of offers on the table, but it was very short notice and wasn't worth the risk. It was like literally 3 or 4 day notice fights. And I said, you know, it's not worth it with this one. I mean, he's not a big name around here, but he got a good record. He's been fighting on a decent shows back in Europe and Russia. The only thing stopped me, obviously, for a while. My thing is I'm fighting against a Muslim guy. So it's I didn't say it to anyone. My coaches know it. I look at it as a sport. I don't look at it anything else. So I'm moving forward with that one. Other than that, no, he's a good guy as a 9-0. Like, he got a good record for me to take away.
And, of course, everyone's going to be able to see this part of Bellator 254, December the 10th. Of course, main card on the CBS Sports Network. And, of course, the preliminary card will be on the Bellator YouTube channel. Cameron, as always, man, appreciate time. And let everyone know anything find you on social media and anything else you want to mention.
No, that's it. I just want to say thank you for having me on your show. Thanks to my family and Team Link family for guys taking all their personal time, even during the Thanksgiving, during holidays. They're always there, push me forward. And I couldn't be here without God's will and without my teammates and family, man.
Great stuff there from Cameron Lashnoff. Appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his matchup coming up here on December the 10th at Bellator 254. Of course, that'll be the fight card headlined by Alima Leigh McFarlane defending her Bellator title. So great stuff there from Cameron Lashnoff, not just talking about his semi-pro soccer days, but also talking about the interaction he had with his mother about his viral video from his last fight against Kyle Crushmere. Of course, we all remember seeing that clip, and I'm sure that's probably a clip we're going to see leading up to this fight next week at Bellator 254. Now, the final interview you're going to hear is my conversation with Mo Miller. He is a 4-0 prospect. He is going to be a part of LFA 96 coming up on Friday night. So we talked to him about his matchup here on Friday night at LFA 96. Also, we talked about his day job as a loan officer assistant. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to look to remain undefeated, LFA 96, Friday night, December 4th, course live on UFC Fight Pass. Mo, man, appreciate the time. I was speaking to another fighter right before we connected here, and I said, what's it like as a fighter having a fight 1 week after Thanksgiving? Do you just like, you just kind of tell the family, I can't partake in this food?
Yeah, basically. First off, thank you for having me on. But yeah, I didn't partake yesterday. I had a friend up here in Cleveland who participated, and he brought me back some mac and cheese. That's all I wanted.
Mac and cheese is like the go-to Thanksgiving meal item for you?
Yeah, especially like right now. That's all I was like craving if I was to have anything. So I waited all day, and then he finally got me some.
See, so like, I'm not a big turkey guy, but I'm all about me some pumpkin pie.
I'm a sweet potato pie.
Okay.
But I feel you.
Yeah, it's that's like my one too. You know, this time of year, you know, I'll have me some pumpkin pie, but that's I'm just not a big turkey guy. But you know, of course, you've got a matchup come up here at LFA 96. Before we kind of get into that, of course, you know, your history is you know, collegiate wrestler, all 3-time All American, you know, one of the things that I found kind of interesting that was said to me is how your parents are your biggest supporters. Were they on board from the start, or did it take some time?
They were on board for wrestling. They love wrestling, but MMA, I think my dad, he was on board. My mom, not so much, but so it's been so far so good. Knock on wood, I haven't lost or gotten hurt. So she's been pretty cool so far, but so I don't know how she feel about it too much now. I know she should still support me. If it was in Ohio, she would come for sure. But I don't know. It's been all good so far.
So pre-COVID life, when you know you had fans in the building, whatnot, was mom the quiet mom in the crowd, or was she the loud one?
I feel like you know that answer. But yeah, she was the she a loud one. I can hear her. I heard her all the way through youth wrestling to college, like. She got a distinct voice, like, so I can hear her even during the fight.
So was there a time you're like, Mom, you got to calm down. I got to hear my coaches a little better.
I hear it, but I really don't pay attention to it, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, I can definitely hear my coaches. I can hear my coaches and my mom the loudest, but I don't really pay attention. She just screaming.
And of course, you know, obviously, as you're working your way up this game, you know, you've got the regular job as a loan office assistant. So, which kind of makes me think about, you know, there's sometimes you can have a hard, you know, day in training. You might get some bruises on the face. Do you ever get any interesting looks when you come into the office?
Yeah. Like one time I came in there, well, they all know. So like, they all support me there. So like, after a fight, I really haven't had too many bruises yet, but definitely during practice, I came in there, black eye, limping, hurt something all the time. Like, so they understand. They just know it's part of the game.
Yeah, and it's been a quick rise for you since turning pro in August of last year. You're coming off the big win against Mando Gutierrez. As you like, you think about your first four fights as a professional mixed martial artist, how would you describe it?
How would I describe my first four fights? I think I got a lot of experience in those four fights. They all were different type of opponents. I had a ground guy, I had brawlers, I had strikers. So I had wrestlers. So I just think they gave me so far a good amount of experience leading up to this fight, at least. You know what I mean? So I think those fights help me leading into this fight for sure.
You got Carvalho here. He's 5-2 in his career. How is he a different opponent as to your previous four pro opponents?
Now he's different for the fact that, just from what I'm seeing, he's long as me, tall as me, long as me. I think the measurements match up, for the most part. I've been the longer reach guy in a lot of my fights. Amateurs, I had taller opponents. But so far, the pros, I think he's the biggest body that I'm going against. But as far as skill set, I think I've seen guys with his skill set.
As you prepare for this fight, was there something you saw on film where you're like, man, that's what he does best? Like, was there one skill that stuck out to you more than the others?
No. I just think he's a all-around fighter. I think he's just a tough guy who's coming to fight in every position. So that's just what I've seen on him. So he doesn't have something he goes to every fight, I would say, in my opinion. So I don't know what he'll bring against me. You know what I mean? I think I need to dictate what he does.
Yeah, I think I understand exactly what you're saying there. You know, I hear so many fighters, you know, they'll say to me, like, you know, hey, you know, I understand what my opponent does well, what he doesn't do well, to, you know, things along those lines. But they'll say, you know, at the end of the day, this is about me. I got to go out there and do what I am. Do you view an MMA fight like you did a wrestling match of, you know, maybe it was like, look, this is about me. I got to go out there and implement what I do best.
Yeah, I think fighting is a lot more dangerous than a wrestling match, so, and a lot more ways to lose. So I think you always respect the opponent, you know what I mean? It's a fight, so you never overlook anyone, you know what I mean? So for me, I'm just looking at him like he, like each fight is another level. I'm assuming he's better than everybody I fought. So he may be, or he may be not, or maybe not, you know what I mean? But that's how I'm training, and that's how I'm looking at this guy.
What was the toughest part in transitioning from wrestling to MMA? Was it just, you know, getting punched in the face?
No, the toughest part was the rounds, the 15 minutes for pro, in my opinion, you know what I mean? Because in wrestling, you can spurt, you know what I mean? For 7 minutes, you can go all out. And I used to like that pace. But now you got to slow it down. Like I said, there's so many ways to lose. So in wrestling, you can, when you get them down, you can drive, looking for the pin. But in MMA, you take them down, you got to be patient. You know what I mean? Because you can get submitted. So I think expanding the fight over time instead of like a first is the main difference for me. I think I adjusted to it well, but at the beginning, it was tough.
And we can see the shirt there, the Mo Show. I saw that on Tapology as well. So what's the origin of the Mo Show? Was it somebody inside the gym, somebody you went to school with? How did this come about?
All right, so I'll tell you. So my like before my first amateur fight, me and a group of friends was like looking at the card or whatever, and they were like, so-and-so's on the card. Then I said, I basically said, I didn't care. It's about me. It's the Mo Show. You know what I mean? So that's kind of how it, so I named the Mo Show like the event. So like LFA 96 would be the Mo Show. So like, that's all, that's for me. You know what I mean? People just start calling it a nickname. So I kind of just let it ride. I really didn't have a nickname. I just used that to put me in a mindset that the show is all about me, like no matter who else is there or whatever.
I always like to get the, let my listeners know kind of about, you know, who you are, just the everyday guy walking around, you know, like, so like when you don't got to be in the gym and you just be at home, you know, chilling, relaxing with friends, family, whatnot, what do you like to do?
I think I'm a normal person. I think I like to do pretty much what everybody likes to do. Like this part of my life, though, I would say since like 2018 on, like I've been super focused on fighting. You know what I mean? So like anything that doesn't involve like improving me in that, like I don't really give it too much energy. You know what I mean? Like I'm 28, so like when I turned pro, I'm ready to go. Like that's all I'm focused on right now. Like, so after this fight, I'm going to be hanging out for probably only like a week or get through Christmas now that it's that time. And then I want to keep training. Like, I don't really have time to do too many things right now. But I think when I do have time, I'm a regular person. I do whatever you do.
What do you do to get your mind off the fight game?
When, I don't know, man. I like to play games sometimes. Like, I just right now I don't really like to think about it. So that's a good question. I don't like to think about the fight until they flying me out. You know, when I'm forced to think about it. So like I do just like I was gonna go Black Friday-ish. I'm just to walk around today. I just got out of my last like sparring like literally an hour ago. So I'm probably still sweating, you know what I mean? But Yeah, that's what I was about to do. I was literally about to go Black Friday shopping, just not even the shop, but just walk around and keep my mind off of it as we get a little closer.
Yeah, for me, it's like when I do have time to kind of not do anything, and you know, it's more late, and I pop on the Xbox, just started playing NBA 2K21. Like, to me, I'm a Madden NBA 2K guy. Like literally, that's probably about the only games I ever play. You know,
me too. I'll play UFC or Call of Duty every now and then, but like I would prefer 2K or Madden.
Yeah, I just did the whole create the player, you know, so I'm going through the whole storyline right now before you get to leave. Like to me, like I sit there and say, I've got an hour or two. That's just kind of what I do.
Right, and you definitely can waste an hour or more.
Oh, God. Oh, wait. Yeah, I think the other night I was playing, I'm like, I think I started playing, I don't know, like 10:30. I'm like, geez, it's 1 a.m.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we definitely have all that to kind of get our minds off. But, of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here, LFA 96, Friday night, December the 4th, of course, live on UFC Fight Pass Mo. Appreciate the time. Of course, let them know they can find you on social media and anything else you want to mention. The floor is yours, man.
First, thank you for having me again. Shout out to my team and my coaches for helping me prepare for this fight. The last day was today, so we finally done. All the hard stuff is over. Shout out to all my sponsors, and you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Mo_MILLA.
And there you have my conversation with Mo Miller. I appreciate him taking some time out of his day to talk to me about his matchup come here on Friday night, LFA 96. Of course, that's an event that you can watch live on UFC Fight Pass. Definitely someone to keep your eye out on. You know, he's a fighter that's never lost. He went 6-0 as an amateur and now 4-0 as a professional mixed martial artist. So look forward to seeing that. Do also want to thank my other guests coming on this edition of the MMA Report podcast, Justin James, Jordan Levitt, and Cameron Lashinoff. Of course, coming up on Wednesday, I will be joined by Daniel Galvan for the Wednesday edition of the MMA Report podcast. Myself and Daniel will talk about the top headlines in MMA. Also, we will get you ready for that UFC Vegas number 16 card, of course. Then following UFC Vegas number 16, we head right into a UFC pay-per-view as the month of December is going to be a big month for the UFC. Some great fight cards. Really looking forward to that fight night card on December 19th. That is an amazing fight card that the UFC has put together. And obviously it's, we got the flyweight title fight, part headlining UFC 255, 256. Of course, quick turnaround there for Davison Figueiredo. Of course, if you ever have a question, comment, topic that you want to hear myself or Daniel discuss here on the podcast, best way to do that, hit me up on social media. You can do that on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. You can hit that up on Instagram, same handle as well there, at Jason_Floyd. Or if you want to, well, maybe send it in via an email. Email is simply Jason@radioinfluence.com. Of course, thank you for everyone who downloads the podcast each and every time a new episode is posted. Of course, show is available Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com, many places that you can check out this show. And really would appreciate if you leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That really does help me out a lot. So I really do appreciate if you could do that. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week, the interview edition on Sunday, and then on Wednesdays, myself and Daniel, as we talk about the top headlines and get you ready for that week's MMA.
This is a Valor Hour with Tim Lloyd Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
This week on the Valor Hour, we talked to Tyler Hampton and Charlie Miller ahead of their Valor Fighting Championship Tie Night at the Joe contest is coming up next Friday night at the VFC 76, December 4th, at the world famous Cotton Eye Joe. Both those gentlemen will be participating in the 8-man title championship tournament. Plus, Justin Watson and myself look back at last week's UFC 255 event and ahead at this week's UFC Blades versus Derek Lewis event. It's a Turkey Day edition of the Valor Hour. Don't miss it.
Valor Hour with Valor Fighting Challenge matchmaker Tim Loy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.